Hello, my name is Thomas and welcome to the latest episode of British Culture, Albion Never Dies. Today, I'm just at home relaxing. It's the August bank holiday. So, I was looking into what we could do, my wife and I. We happen to be down in London. We've been travelling all over the country recently, especially because of my work has been taking me around. And in London, well, when a man is tired of London, he's tired of life, surely. Dr. Samuel Johnson there. But anyway, we're looking at all the wonderful options. We were thinking of going to Kew Gardens to see the pot plant there that was put there in 1775, mainly so that we could see a pot plant that hasn't moved since, before the USA was founded. We'd previously been to Jermyn Street to see all the old shops there. We went to Fortnum and Mason, established in 1707, mainly to buy some tea and a few snacks. It's a department store. You can get, you know, plates and, well, anything there, really. We also saw Lock & Co., established 1676, the hat maker that we saw in the first Kingsman movie. It's the oldest hat shop in the world, and it's still family-run. And they made the first bowler hat, originally called Coke's, named after the customer who commissioned it. And of course, it's the shop where Charlie Chaplin got his famous bowler hat. Anyway, we saw lots of old shops, including florists, where Ian Fleming's James Bond gets his aftershave, along with quite a few other characters getting everything from florists. I think Ian Fleming quite liked the shop, and I think they sent him a fair few gifts every time he mentioned it. That was founded, of course, in 1730. So, plenty of historic things to see in London. But then we did consider also going to the National Gallery to see the painting of a bloody big ship, the painting we see in Skyfall, starring Daniel Craig. But, you know, when we're thinking of going out and seeing these things, we thought of the crowds, the hordes of children, and in London, noisy city, we just had a sleepless night, mainly thanks to neighbours. So finally we settled on just watching a Bond film. I didn't suggest it, my wife suggested it. What a wonderful wife. In fact, I haven't really reviewed any of the Bond films on my podcast, although I've had many fun facts derived from them and occasionally visited locations seen in them. I don't actually watch the Bond films very often. Maybe each film I'd watch every few years, maybe. I think I've seen Dr. No once in the last 7 years, and I've actually only seen No Time to Die once. So I really don't like overwatching films, but I enjoy them very much. I don't like to kill that enjoyment by overwatching them. And I do leave the film reviews to other people. For example, Mr. Dean James Bond, Joe Darlington. It was really wonderful to interview him a little while ago. Actually, quite a while ago. I should probably try and get him back. But he does some fantastic reviews, and he goes back and does them again and again. And to see those reviews going back, I think are really interesting. Of course, The Bond Experience covers this pretty well as well. And Calvin Dyson, I always think, looks very young. I'm assured he's older than I think he is. But he reviews all kind of media from a really media perspective, which I find interesting. Of course, my perspective is very much the cultural perspective. Like, if this is a city, it visits a curious location, I'm always interested in it. The filmmaking itself, I guess that's just not my department. So I don't really review any of these, I don't overwatch them, but in the last 2 weeks, the wife and I have watched, well, we've watched the three first Pierce Brosnan films, and we're probably going to watch the fourth and final one very, very shortly. I did actually ask on my Instagram about Die Another Day after the Bond Experience, talked about, well, I think he termed the underdog Bond films, the ones that are normally at the bottom of the list of people's ratings, and had people kind of defend them on his YouTube channel. I really enjoy that. So I asked people on my Instagram about Die Another Day, because I really enjoy it. I think it's one of the films I've actually seen more than most of the others. I think it's actually just fun. Just a fun romp, and I think it's something you could show to, like, especially any kid and get them into. Jeff on Instagram said he's been a Die Another Day fan since day one. Nicholas Slayton was saying the film has one of the most gritty Le Carre-esque spy plots in concept. I love the first half. The rest, ... Lots of people don't like how it goes after the midpoint of the film. One gentleman, Scarf and Goggles on Instagram, messaged me because he found it nostalgic. His late father had worked on it with Mr. Scarf and Goggles. I found that really interesting. They were transporting the vehicles all around. 007 Islander said it was music to his ears to hear that I like it. He loves the song, as silly and stupid lyrically to the others as it may seem. Yeah, dressing like McQueen, never minded Die Another Day myself. Pierce is really comfortable in the role. And is he ready? Actually, we had a good back and forth about this. I love the idea that he's in prison, gets out, etc., etc. Yeah, I really, really enjoy this film. I say I used to watch it quite a lot. I haven't watched it for a long time, so looking forward to it on this bank holiday. Of course, I've lived in China for 6 years, where if a company gives you a holiday, you then have to work it back, which seems like a strange arrangement, but bear in mind that China has urbanized in the last generation, or at least the last two generations, so quite frequently on a holiday, people want to see their parents or their grandparents, and they're in another town, or they're in another city, so we're moving around the days. We still need all our work days, you know. When I first went to China, I just had 10 days off that year, excluding weekends. So, you know, you pack those together as close as possible so that you can use some of those to travel, enjoy, and then come back. So, yeah, days aren't so much given as moved. So lots of people, for example, if they wanted a week or two off for Chinese New Year, would then spend a month or two of six-day weeks to work back the days. But here in England, we just get given the holiday. No moving around weekend days afterwards. But now, people who are not from the UK might wonder, what is a bank holiday? The statutory bank holidays we know and love today were introduced in 1871 by the banker and politician John Lubbock, the first Baron of Avebury. In fact, he was made a baron and then chose Avebury as his kind of home of his baronetcy. It's because there's the great monuments there, and he was a pioneer of protecting important monuments. So the fact that we still have Stonehenge, it wasn't knocked down to create, I guess, a Victorian supermarket, is actually partly down to his influence. He was an interesting character, so aside from his banking and political activities, he was a scientific writer, and his science included his efforts to teach his black poodle to read, trying to teach the poodle to read and recognise words from flashcards and associate them with objects and so on. Now, before this time, holidays generally were non-standardised. I think in some of my deep dives with Keynes, especially when we were talking about Christmas, we actually went into this a little bit, but different regions, cities, villages, even different industries, and in the Victorian era, early Victorian era, different factories, it was all different. Everybody celebrated different stuff in different times in different ways. But of course, as we all came together in the Industrial Revolution, you all start to depend on each other more and more. We start to standardize these things, and John Lubbock was one of the pioneers in standardizing them. The BBC have a series of articles on him, so just pulling out some of the interesting facts that I found. For a while, some called the first bank holidays St. Lubbock's Days after the banker. Funnily enough, it didn't stick. It was rumoured that Sir John Lubbock was so keen on cricket, he chose the bank holiday dates to fall on the days when his village cricket matches were played. True or not, the masses were ecstatic with the holidays. Of course, it's the origin of trains connecting up the country as well, so people were using the trains to get about. I think Michael Portillo's series on Great British Railway Journeys goes into this very, very well. Now, this August bank holiday was initially introduced as a way to give us all a chance to make the most of the summer. Interestingly, it didn't always fall on the last Monday of the month until 1971. It always took place on the first Monday of August, but it was eventually moved as it clashed with the traditional two-week shutdown that many companies went through in the summer. I got very curious in this curious character, Sir John Lubbock, who lived from 1838 to 1913, so, I don't know, it feels closer than I would have thought. But this blog, The History of Parliament, had a really good article on him. Lubbock himself would have had little difficulty in finding something to occupy his time on a bank holiday. An energetic polymath, he had an extensive range of interests. He was a friend and neighbour of Charles Darwin, under whose influence he took a particular interest in the study of insects. This led him to keep a rather unusual pet, a wasp, which he had caught in the Pyrenees. It lived for around 9 or 10 months and is preserved at the Natural History Museum. Brilliant. I'm going to have to go there and try and find it. Lubbock's observations of his pet were included in his 1882 book on ants, bees, and wasps, just one of many scientific publications he produced. This is where he wrote about his efforts to teach his poodle to read, and apparently this caused a huge amount of correspondence, as his readers also tried the same experiments at home and wrote to him about the cleverness or lack thereof of their own pooches. So, listeners, are you teaching your dogs to read? What's going on there? Please do message me on Instagram at FlemingNeverDies or email me at AlbionNeverDies@gmail.com. I'm very, very curious to hear about all attempts to teach animals to read. According to the Londonist, John Lubbock entertained thousands at his lectures on the subject of bees at the Royal Institution and other places. In the interest of scientific investigation, he played the violin to the little critters and intoxicated them with alcohol to see what would happen. Okay, so there we go. We have an August bank holiday thanks to a man who tried to teach a poodle to read, gave alcohol to bees, and played the violin to them. Sounds like my kind of guy. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.